Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 77 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been a great couple of weeks of gaming here in the gaming capital of the world. How's it going, Cody?
It's going well. Thanksgiving still continues for the Indianapolis Colts. They are 0-13, I think.
As of the recording of this, 0-13.
Outstanding.
By the time you're listening to it, they're probably already 0-16. But, I couldn't remember. Has the team gone 0-16?
Yes, the Detroit Lions a few years ago.
The Lions did, manage to do that. Okay, so we won't be the first to do that.
No.
Do you think we'll actually get a win before the end of the season?
No.
No? Really?
Nope.
Okay. Well, at this point, are we going to get Luck or are we going to get Robert Griffin Jr.? The third.
Andrew Luck.
Okay. Yeah, very good. All right. Well, see, there's our little 30 seconds of football. So all of you who...
Hey, the Super Bowl's here, so that's cool.
Exactly.
You guys will get to see Indianapolis on TV, and it'll be neat.
Yeah. No Colts to be found, unfortunately. No. I just did my Super Bowl volunteer training.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm going to be in the Super Bowl Village. It's going to be way cool.
Super Bowl Village.
To raise
a lot of money.
Exactly. A lot of people. It was actually funny in the training how much they the purpose of all of the stuff that they're doing is to have a good time and to throw a big party and to make a big deal out of it, but it's to get Indianapolis's name on the national and world stage.
Yeah.
Like the guy was just saying, the ESPN is going to be down there starting at this time, and they're going to be every time they're broadcasting, they'll be saying the word Super Bowl, Indianapolis, Super Bowl, Indianapolis, and we want them to do that as many times as possible. So they're really excited about it. So anyway, so I'm looking forward to that coming up in the end of January. So.
Of course, for everyone listening, Indianapolis is already on the national map, international map, as the gaming capital of the world.
Exactly, at least as far as we're concerned. And that's what we're here to talk about is games, board games, card games, role-playing games, and all that stuff. Cody, what are we talking about today?
Well, tis the season for our 2011 holiday gift guide, where we're going to tell you the best Chrismahana Kwanzaa...
You got them all mixed together there.
We're going to tell you what gift in our own special way, because we have the best categories in the biz.
Now, we know we're releasing this a little bit close to Christmas, a little closer than we did last year, but there's still plenty of time if you're listening to this to, hopefully, unless you're listening to it months from now, if you're listening to it and it just gets released, there's still time to get to your friendly professional game store and get some of these great games. So stay tuned, and we'll be talking about all these different categories and fun stuff like that. We may even be throwing in a review.
Whoa.
We're just going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
But, we're going to start off with a rundown as usual.
All right, it's time for the rundown. And before we get into the rundown, we want to give our due penance to our great sponsor, Myriad Games, who sponsors Game On with Cody and John. Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere.
What did you say?
I don't know. I just kind of ran over that one.
Okay.
And, we're talking about, holiday shopping, and Myriad Games has some great December deals. If you check them out on Facebook or Twitter or go to their website at myriadgames.com, you can see all sorts of great deals going on, including a Let's Make a Deal promotion where you simply email Myriad Games what you're looking for, what games are on your wish list, and they will package that up into a special custom deal just for you and just shoot it back to you.
You don't have to wear a costume, a silly costume, right?
No, you don't have to. There are no zonks, no curtains.
Very nice. Yeah. Now, they still even have the drawing for Myriad Money? I think they do, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you join them on Facebook and like their page there, you can be entered into drawings, monthly drawings. Weekly drawings? Monthly drawings?
Monthly.
Monthly drawings for Myriad Money. So that's exciting stuff, too. It's cool how well I know the sponsor, isn't it?
It is.
All right, so
it's been a few years. You're entitled.
Thanks, as always, to Myriad Games. Let's start the rundown. Cody, you go first.
Okay, so my biggest one, I'm going to go big, and I'm already home, so I don't need to, is Fortune and Glory, the cliffhanger game from Flying Frog. This is the big $100 coffin box game. Uh-oh.
The cops have found us.
They're onto us.
You guys hear that, listeners? I've got a little siren going on outside. All right. Okay. Stay calm. Everything's all right.
My gosh.
We got the door barricaded.
That's right. So I got to play two games of this. The first one, I didn't have a lot of time to read up on the rules. And it was just one of those terrible situations where I was getting the game out and I was sorting it. And I was trying to learn the game, you know, as we were going, and you know, and people had questions, which is fine, you know. But I was just flustered, and you know, I like to be very prepared when I teach games.
Sure, yeah.
And it didn't really go well. We called it early, but I still wanted to give it a shot.
How many players? The first time?
Five, six.
Oh, okay. Six. Players. I've heard that's a little much for that game.
Huh? It is. Okay. So, but with the theme, you know, with the pulp adventure and, you know, I just wanted to give it another try. I wasn't done with it. So I organized another game. I read up more on the rules and we played a four-player game of it.
Okay.
And it was good. It was a neat game. It exuded the theme well. I'm just not convinced it's anywhere near a $100 game.
Oh, okay.
To me, it seems like even the bits, I don't think. There's a lot of bits, yeah, but none of them are extraordinary. Like, I just don't see where it's $100. To me, it seems like Flying Frog got together and says, we need to make a splash at Gen Con. We need to come out with a big, expensive game that people are going to be... You know, it got people's attention, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, they can come out with, like, you know, Conquest of Planet Earth and all that, and Invasion from Outer Space.
Which I want to play that one. Conquest of Planet Earth, I'm really interested in.
But that didn't make a huge splash.
No, not at all.
But Fortune Glory, everyone was like, oh, man.
Because it's a big coffin box, and look at that, Nazis.
It's a great $60 game. You know,
that happens to cost $100.
Yeah, it would be fine at $60. It's just... I hate to invoke the name of Wheaton on this podcast, but it's kind of like his, you know, he wants luck and playtime to be inversely proportional. That is, if you're going to play, you know, a 3 to 4 hour game, you know, all this game was rolling dice and flipping cards and watching other people rolling dice and flipping cards.
Oh.
I mean, that was pretty much the whole game.
Yeah.
And it just goes on too long. It's not terrible. You know, I'd play it again, but I'm not going to request it. I'm not going to buy it. It's just...
Is it fully cooperative or is it versus one bad guy?
No, it has a competitive mode, which we played. And it does have a cooperative mode, which I didn't play.
Okay.
I'll give you a reason why. but, you know, it was just aight. You know, it was a fine $60 game that they just... I think drummed up to be a $100 game. So I'm glad I game shared it. It was fun to play. I would play it again, but I'm in no hurry to do so.
Let me ask you one other question.
Yes.
Did you play the CD?
No, the CD wasn't in it for some reason. So.
Oh, because you're game sharing.
Yeah, I don't know what happened CD. To it, but if it's like any of other Flying Frogs CDs, it's probably a good thing we didn't.
Yeah. Okay.
I can appreciate the effort they put into theming their games. I mean, because, you know, Last Night on Earth, you don't play for the super tight rule set. You play for the fun, but at least it's only like an hour and a half or 2 hours, and you're not going to be sitting there for 4 hours trying to play this.
The more that I see their games, and I haven't had a chance to play this yet, but the more I see the artwork, the more I just don't like it. I'm getting a little bit tired of the photography thing, I think. And I don't know. That's just a personal thing. It's not, you know, your mileage may vary on that.
I think it works better in Last Night on Earth than it does in, like, Fortune and Glory. Okay. Last Night on Earth, it was kind of... And maybe that's because it was innovative at the time. Like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know?
Yeah. I remember the first year when they came to Gen Con with Last Night on Earth, and it was so different. You know?
And you had the people that, you know, the actors and actresses.
Actually there at the booth, yeah.
You know, like Doc Brody, I think it was.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Fortune and Glory, yeah. I hate to say meh, but meh. It was okay.
Okay.
Let's see. In non-meh news, I played a few party games, including Time's Up Title Recall.
One of the best ever.
Played with two different groups, and it...
It kills.
The best party game ever. I mean,
it's great. Such a good game.
Yeah, it has no equal. also played Who Would Win.
Okay.
Now, I've had this one for a while. I usually just kind of make up my own rules for it, you know, or, you know, I might appoint someone as a judge or have a floating judge and have, you know, play it in teams.
Did you lose the rule book or something?
No. I don't know. I now know why I did that, because I read the rules and we played it at a party as written. Mm-hmm. And it's not very fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think you really have to play that as teams.
Okay.
And select the most impartial person to be a judge.
I remember you guys doing that at Extra Life, and it seemed like that made a lot of sense to do it that way. Because you kind of play off of one another. And
yeah, because in this case, it's just two people arguing, and then everyone else just kind of picking a winner, but it's kind of boring for the other ones, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea.
It's a fun party game, but play it in teams and play it with a judge. I think that's a better way to do it.
Okay.
Played Backseat Drawing from Out of the Box Games.
Really?
Yeah. That one got brought out, and a fun game. I hadn't played that in a very long time.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool
game. Yeah, it was a nice party game, nice twist on Pictionary, and Out of the Box, they're one of the best at what they do. You know, you can play the games right out of the box. I didn't even remember the rules, let alone the premise.
Right.
So I just, you know, quick scan, and we were off and running, and everyone liked it. So
awesome.
After my second game of Fortune and Glory, we brought Quarriors to the table.
Ah.
And I'm officially pronouncing that dead to me.
Done. Okay, listeners, let's get our calendars out here and see how long that took.
I'm calling it. It's we poked fun at, you know, the people that say, oh, you just buy the most expensive thing available. Oh, there's not a lot of thought into it. You know, you just really buy the most expensive thing available. You know, the dragons break that game. You have to take them out.
Yeah.
I mean, we played a game and there were dragons, and I think the other two players, whether purposely or not, we're not going after the dragons, maybe trying a different strategy. I just saved up, bought Portals and Dragons. That's all I bought.
Yeah.
And I won. I dominated. And it's just, and I didn't feel there was a lot of strategy involved in it. And almost like Fortune and Glory, that's not a bad $30 game. I know I'm kind of a miser when it comes to price points.
Yeah.
For $50, I don't get I know it has the custom dice and all that jazz. I see no fun in it.
Wow. Okay.
Just going to say it. So.
Yeah. All right.
Quarriors dead to me.
Well, I'll have some more to say about Quarriors in a second.
Okay. So. My final game item is an iOS game. John, you got me onto Ticket to Ride Pocket.
Yes.
Which is Ticket to Ride on your iPhone. Now, Ticket to Ride's
or your iPod Touch, which is what I have.
You know, Ticket to Ride, it's a fine game. I'm not really requesting it all the time, but I don't hate it either.
I don't think I played the paper version of it for a good while.
Yeah, you know. But it makes a great little time filler on an iOS device.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if it's on Android as well. I don't really care.
Sorry, Android users.
You're like, oh, we don't use Apple products.
but don't play Ticket to Ride Pocket then, I guess.
It's nice. You can play solo. You can play with other people who have it. You can play against computer opponents. But it moves so quickly that you can get a whole game done in like 10 minutes. You know?
Yeah, literally. Sometimes less than 10 minutes if you're quick about it. It's great.
And before anyone says anything, I know that in game playing, it's the journey, not the destination. You know, it's the fellowship and everything. But if you're just going to kill 10 minutes playing a game, you know, that's a fun way to do it, I think. Ticket to Ride Pocket, not too shabby.
I like that. And I think it's only 99 cents, which is great.
That's pretty good.
You know, for a lot of the iOS games, a little bit more.
Yeah, so when Fortune and Glory comes out on the iPod,
you're gonna be there.
Yeah, I'll be right there. That's all I've got. Kind of a light rundown, but starting with the next game night, I'm finally able to attend. So I'm on a regular basis, very excited.
Which I will not be attending that game night, but you know. But after that, you know, we'll be there together. So that's going to be fun.
We in January, I'm going to. I have a copy of Risk Legacy.
Yeah.
And we have a group set aside for that, and we are going to be playing at least monthly game of that with the same group, and I am jazzed.
So. Yeah, and I'm still wondering the listeners who haven't heard of this game, it's. We don't have to go into great detail about it. I'm sure we'll talk about it a whole lot in 2012. But you know, it's a version of Risk where you can actually change the game permanently, and it will never go back to the way it was. And so at every game, things will change. Cards
will change.
There are
stickers to put on the boards. Cards will get ripped up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's intense.
I especially like the fact that in the rule book, there are giant blank sections that you have stickers that will add new rules to the game that you stick into the rule book and change the rule book.
It's fantastic.
What an amazing, innovative idea. So in the bottom tray of the game, this isn't really a spoiler because anybody who'd buy the game would see this. In the bottom tray of the game, there's an envelope that says, "Do not open ever."
Because a lot of the envelopes and trays have, you know, open this when the ninth city has been founded, or open this when blah, 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 you know, conditional envelopes. This just says, "Do not open ever." And I'm not going to open it.
Ever?
It's quite clear.
Oh my gosh. You just changed all the rules to who would win, but you got to stick to what it says.
It's in an envelope, John. There's stickers involved.
So I have to buy my own copy just so I can see what's in that.
Well, I think I've decided that whoever wins, like, because pretty much at the end of 15 games, whoever has won the most games, because the winner writes their name on the board,
right?
Whoever wins, whoever has the most victories after 15 games gets to name the world. And so I think I'm just going to present this as an upfront thing. The winner gets the game. I'm willing to do that because that's I think if I like it enough, I will just get a second copy to play with other people. And I know people say it's a money grab, but
it's not though. If you play a game 15 times and it's like a 1 to 2 hour game or whatever,
it's going to take us over a year to get through. If we play once a month, it's going to take us over a year to get through.
Yeah, I can probably count on, well, two, maybe three hands, the number of games that I played more than 15 times that are in my collection.
Yeah.
You know, so that I think it's going to be great.
So there you go.
All right. Well,
very excited.
Awesome.
But that's all I got for now.
Okay. My rundown, very, very lean. Had a lot going on outside of the gaming world lately.
Tis the season.
Well, it's holiday stuff. My wife's grandmother passed away, so we were away for a few days with funeral stuff. And I've actually been focusing a lot on health and fitness stuff lately. I think I mentioned that in a previous episode. So I've been doing a lot of running. And
you're wasting away in front of me.
I'm trying to waste away. I'm trying to be less of a man than I am right now. But so I haven't gotten a whole lot of gaming stuff in, but did go to the game on game night last time and played a couple of games. Got a Small World to the table, which I haven't played Small World in quite a while. So it was a 5-player game, which is a lot of people in one game. I'm not sure if I played a 5-player game before. The game scales perfectly well because they have the 2 double-sided boards, so you can go from 2 to 5 players. But we also played, whoever brought the game had all of the expansions.
Ooh.
And that was fine, I guess, except that, you know, there's no one reference sheet that shows what all the different abilities are. There is for the base game, that nice big sheet that you get. But then every extra thing has its own reference sheet. And just we had to look up a lot of stuff. And there was things that, you know, if we were just playing the base game, I would have known what all of the abilities do pretty much off the top of my head. We had to look up a lot of stuff. So, but it's still a pretty good time. And I like that game a lot. And still don't have much of a urge to get the underground version, though. Because I played that at Origins last year, or earlier this year. And it's the same game, you know, it just has different abilities and stuff to it. So, you know, I'm still glad that I own a copy of it. And, you know, I just need to get that at the table more because it's one I think I played that one time with Ethan. And I think he could definitely play that one at this point.
It's aight.
Yeah. After that, I got to play a 4-player game of Kingdom Builder. This is one that's gotten to the table quite a number of times now. So I played that with Cody a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mention that.
Played it at the game night a couple of times. And we played it at the last game night. And my buddy Brian said he wanted to try it again. And the game that was played at the previous game that I actually just watched, it was 4 people who played. And they all had kind of mixed opinions about the game. They're like, it's, you know, I'm not sure about it and everything. So Brian wanted to try it again, which I think is a good sign. You know, the fact that he was thinking about it and said, oh, I want to give this another try. So we played another 4-player game and with 2 new players, and then me and Brian. And I forget who won. I don't think it was me. But I think the overall opinion was still kind of mixed on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but I really like it.
Yeah.
And I've liked it every time that I play it. I just think it actually takes a little bit of a sort of a marinating time. You know, you need to play it about 3 or 4 times to see what all the different abilities are. Because the special token abilities that allow you to move things around and put extra things on the board, those really do correspond with those Kingdom Builder cards, which is how you get points in the game. And so if you know what those things do, you can really develop a little mini strategy as to how you're going to where you're going to put things and how you're going to move things around. But it takes a little while to get that. So we might talk about that more later in the gift guide. Spoiler.
I'm certainly not.
So I played a game of that. And I think that was all I played at the game night. But like, I showed up kind of late because of stupid traffic. But
I thought you were going to say something about Quarriers.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm sorry. I forgot. I did play Quarriers. That was the other game that I played. And another friend at the game night, John, he brought a his copy of Quarters, which is a pretty decked out, cool copy that he, you know, you have the Plano box, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the he actually bought these little cylindrical plastic cases with caps, screw caps on them, that each individual set of dice go into. And then they all sit into like this box, this like Lucite box. And so that was pretty neat that we had that. And while we were playing that, there was actually another game of that going on where someone had the exact same stuff, except they also brought a Lazy Susan that they set in the middle, like a round thing that spun around so people could get access to the dice more easily. So that was kind of interesting. But John also had brought the new expansion, the Rise of the Demons expansion, which includes the Corrupt Quiddity dice.
Oh my.
And it also has some different corrupted characters. So there was new dice. So there's a few a new set of creatures that used new dice. But then there was also some cards that were just cursed versions of the that you already had dice for in the base game.
Mm.
Which is kind of the way we talked about it earlier as to how we thought, you know, the expansions probably should be packaged.
Yeah.
And the cursed characters are interesting because a lot of them would be like, if you inflicted damage on that turn, then you got to put a cursed Quiddity die into someone else's bag, you know. And the cursed Quiddity basically has some sides that had zero Quiddity. And then I want to say that if there was a side that has stars on it, like asterisk on it, that I think maybe makes you get another cursed Quiddity. So it just gets kind of worse and worse and just clogs up your hand. After playing through that, and we played a three-player game of that, I think the overall opinion of the expansion was kind of meh.
Mm.
It was just kind of – we didn't think that – we were hoping that the corrupted Quiddity would really play into the game a lot and that we'd, you know, you'd really get someone else and really a lot more interaction as far as that goes. And it just didn't come up that often, and it just didn't end up being that big of a deal. So
what's your thoughts on the game itself, the whole?
I got to agree with you a little bit, and I don't know exactly what it is about the game that's causing the fun level to decrease. But I think it is just that there's just not much you can do to – I think for me it's probably because you can't defend against attacks. Like, you have a defense value, you know, but you're not dealing any damage.
You can't actively do anything.
You can't actively. You just basically have to sit there and hope that he doesn't get the cool, you know, thing out that's going to destroy the stuff that you already have on the board there. If there was more back and forth interaction like that, more choices for you to make on a defensive level, then I think that would make it a lot more fun. But as it stands, you just do the best you can to get stuff out on the table, which is very luck driven, and then you just kind of wait and you cross your fingers and hope that you can make it all the way around. Yeah. So yeah, the stock's fallen for me on that one as well. I'll still bring it out. As a matter of fact, I think at Christmas time I might see if I can strike up a game of that with my father-in-law and my brothers-in-law, because I think they might think that one's pretty good. But you know, that's about it. That's all I have as far as board and card games. I have been dabbling a little bit more in iOS games because I've realized, wow, I've got an iPod that can actually handle those games. So as Cody mentioned, Ticket to Ride Pocket, I've been playing an awful lot of that. I did download Elder Sign Omens. I can't remember if I mentioned that last episode, but I've been playing quite a bit of that. And I got to say that one may be more fun than the actual board game.
Oh, I think it definitely is. Yeah.
It's essentially the exact same game, but the fact that you can just play it by yourself, or you can pass it around the table or something like that, it makes it go a lot quicker. And, you know, that downtime in the game where you just feel like you're just sort of standing there or sitting there, you know, watching someone else roll dice, you don't get that feeling in the iOS game. So I thought that one's pretty well implemented. I think it's kind of hard, too. I haven't won it yet, but I'm kind of bad at games.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I went ahead and downloaded Ascension Chronicle of the Godslayer on iOS.
Ah, I'd like to hear how this is.
When I've only really played one game of it, and it's fine. I mean, it's exactly the card game. It's really just an exact implementation of the card game. But it's real easy, and the iconography is real easy to understand. They have a really nice tutorial at the beginning that teaches you how to play if you don't already know how to play. So
it's a decent two-player game. I didn't like it with more than two, but... Yeah. I was thinking about that game the other day. That's an okay two-player game, you know?
Yeah. And I haven't tried...
A ringing endorsement.
I don't know if it's a pass and play or if it's like over a Wi-Fi kind of a thing, but I haven't looked into whether maybe you and I could play it together, but we could give that a try sometime. So that is it as far as games. Kind of sad, I know. I haven't even really played much in the way of video games on the Xbox. Arkham Asylum, I know I started that one. Have not had a chance to play that guy at all. So the only other thing that I've been doing... is a little bit of reading, but not reading for myself so much as reading to my kids. On the recommendation of Cody's lovely wife, Kaylin, I've been reading my kids a series of books called The Fairy Tale Detectives, which I wouldn't ordinarily mention because they're mainly kids' books. But I'm finding that as I'm reading them, I'm really interested in the story. And, you know, I've read my kids a lot of books where I just don't give a crap about the story. You know, I'm just, you know, just reading it just for their enjoyment. But with this, our entire family, like, you know, the story time at night has become this whole family thing where, you know, Rachel and me and the kids and the dog, you know, are all in the same room, you know, listening to this story. Just real quick, the basic premise of the story is if you have small kids or even if you have teenagers, I think probably too young for teenagers, I guess, to read on their own. They wouldn't think it's cool enough. But the idea is that it's this set of sisters who are kind of orphans, and they're living with their grandmother in this town. And the idea is that they're the last in the line of from the Brothers Grimm. They're like the last of the ancestors. And that this town that they live in called Fairyport Landing is basically the home of all of the fairy tale creatures from all those books. So they're all real, but they're trapped there like by a magic spell, and they all have like human disguises. So, you know, you have like the big bad wolf, but he has a human disguise, and
Wolf Blitzer.
And so like the, you know, Snow White's a teacher at the elementary school, and one of the three little pigs is the sheriff, you know, his name is Hampstead. And the Prince Charming is the Mayor Charming. And they're all kind of, they've sort of got sinister motives. Some of them do. All the fairy tale creatures seem to be a little bit ticked off that they're, of course, stuck there for all eternity. And so it's the sisters Grimm, as they're called, to sort of investigate weird things that are going on and to keep things in order and all that kind of stuff. So far, we're in like the just started the third book in the series. I think there's seven or eight in the series, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, if your kids like fairy tales and just a real good book to read at night, just reading, you know, like a chapter book or something like that. I'd recommend that. So that is just about all I've been doing in the gaming world. You ready to get your holiday on?
I'm always ready.
All right.
Ho! It's another Christmas song. Whoa! Get ready, brother, for another Christmas song. They play for a month ad infinitum. One day it struck me, someone must write them. So, it's another Christmas song.
Well, the weather outside is frightful.
It's warming up. Yeah, we're going to get into the mid-50s this week with some rain. But
okay.
I mean, the weather is...
That doesn't really fit the theme here, buddy.
Sorry.
The weather outside is rainy. Yes. But, you know, gaming is so delightful.
It is. That's nice.
Thank you.
Good job by you there.
Yeah, so we're going to be giving you our holiday gift guide for Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and all the other things that go on this time of year.
Festivus.
Yeah, Festivus for the rest of us. If you... if you give gifts this time of year, then here's some great things you can give for the gamer in your life or the potential gamer. And we're just going to give you a few of our, I guess, interesting categories. We think they're interesting, I guess.
It's our show, so it's interesting.
So they're interesting to us, right? If you don't like it, you know.
Go listen to the Dice Tower.
Go listen to the Dice Tower.
I'll tell you what to buy.
That was my Tom Vassell voice, sorry.
We like to make fun of Tom Vassell. All right. The first category for our holiday gift guide is... the stocking stuffer. These are some old standbys from previous. I got a couple old standbys and some new ones too. The stocking stuffer.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be the small game that you can fit inside that.
You know, to totally sock. Derail us for just a second, we mentioned the Dice Tower.
We did.
Eric Summerer sent me a text message and says he has seen 3.5 seasons of Mad Men.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So. My bad.
Sorry.
The scotch is on me next time we get together.
We kind of dogged them last time saying that but really, it really wasn't you, Eric. I mean, honestly, what we were saying was, do we really think that Tom is watching the episodes of Mad Men? No.
Cool, Eric.
And I'm not getting any text messages on my phone from Tom. So
that's right.
All right. Because he's far too popular to.
You the man.
To text me on my phone. So anyway, a stocking stuffer.
Yes.
Well, why don't you go first?
Okay, mine was a lot of mine. I kind of tried to mix between new and old games because you know we don't want to be cold on the new here. John's list.
I think I need to go change my list.
I don't want to be cold on the new here, but I picked Haggis.
Oh, very
nice. Retails for I think like $15. And it's a nice small box. It's a good 2 to 3 player game, and you can take it with you anywhere. And it has that teach you like feeling, but. But done just differently enough to where it's a nice addition to your library. So I would say Haggis.
Excellent pick.
And it's a nice pasted on Scottish theme. So you can't beat that.
Oi.
That was Australian.
Oi is Australian?
Oi! Yeah, I don't think it's... Scottish.
Okay. Ah. Once again, we show our lack of knowledge of any culture other than Midwestern American.
As it should be.
My choice for a stocking stuffer is the new version of Hey, That's My Fish, produced by Fantasy Flight Games.
Mm.
So this game was originally from, I think, Mayfair, and they had like the version with wooden penguins and all these big hex tiles. But Fantasy Flight has gotten the rights to this, and they have put out a version. It's in this tiny, tiny box. It's only $12. Comes with these little tiny plastic penguins. You can play it, you know, in a very small. You probably play it on like a tray table on a plane or something.
Mm-hmm.
And a great little abstract game that you know, it's got penguins in it. So that would be a good one.
Good
for
pick. I think the new version of Cold War is going to come in that same size box.
Yes, I would have picked that one, except it's not out yet. But
yeah, there you go.
All right,
nicely done.
All right, so you ready for the next category? Next category is game to give your enemy.
Mm.
We've.
One of those warm fuzzy ones.
I know, right? It is the season to be gaming with your enemy. So, did you have one for this year?
I did, and it is a new game, but it's Panic Station.
Okay.
Because trying the rule book alone will frustrate and confound your enemy to no end. If you try to play that game out of the box without looking at anything online or anything, just reading the rule book, you know how you normally would approach a game.
Yeah.
It is unintelligible. I mean, there are so many holes in it. The game is just broken as is. You have to get the FAQ online. You have to get all this errata. It is unplayable out of the box. So if you want to completely confound your enemy with a game that has a great premise, you know, BSG in 45 minutes sort of thing, but a terrible execution, Panic Station.
All right. Okay. Very good. Well, mine was, I had a tough time with this one this year, you know, because I think that in the past we've done like ghost stories because, you know, you'll never win, you know. But I went with something that, you know, maybe you would want to play with your enemy because you want to beat them.
Sure.
You know? And so I chose the new version of A Game of Thrones, the board game.
Aha.
That's a game of, you know, kind of political intrigue and military and all that kind of stuff that goes along with that great Game of Thrones series. That might be a fun one to give your enemy and then suggest that you play it so you can crush him.
Yep. I have it sitting in my closet. I just read the rules to it.
All right.
It's pretty good.
Okay.
It's a nice mix of like diplomacy and warrior knights and some other style of game. It's going to be pretty good. Yeah.
All right. Outstanding. So you're not saying that I'm your enemy, are you?
No, but I will trample over you to get my victory in it.
In love.
Faux show.
Okay.
Gotta rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay.
All right, next category. The game to ask your rich relative for. Because, you know, hopefully everyone out there has some kind of rich uncle or great uncle or, you know, cousin or something.
Really great uncle.
Yeah. They can might be able to hook you up with something that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to buy for yourself. So for mine, I actually chose the game Walkstar.
Oh, yeah.
And here's why. Because I actually used to have a copy of this game.
It's like a $15, $20 game, right?
Well, I think I paid $20 for it at Origins, and it was like the designer sold it to me at cost. And, you know, it's a great game, and, you know, if you check out on Board Game Geek, it's a cool cooperative game about running a Chinese restaurant. But I recently, because I haven't been playing it, and I was thinking about selling it, but then the Jack Vassell Memorial fundraiser came up, and I thought, I'll just throw this into the auction and be able to maybe raise a little bit of money for the Jack Vassell fund. And wouldn't you know it, someone bought that game for $125.
Goodness gracious.
Little tiny box, you know. And, and you know, great, you know, good on the person who bought it. And I really appreciate them donating so much money to the fund there. But, yeah, if you want to get a copy of that, guy, since the reprint won't be out for quite a while, I think you probably have to pay a pretty large chunk of change to get it. So, Walkstar.
Now, if you have a rich relative, you know, I think maybe they got rich on investments, and they really want to make a good investment in your gaming life, which is why the Sultan table from Geek Chic
I was waiting for it.
Is a great investment.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to play your games in style, and you know the base model is only like $10,000. You know, then you have to add some upgrades, but you know, chump change for a lifetime, for generations of gaming goodness.
This probably shows maybe a difference between you and I. What, you know, I'm thinking rich relative, $125. You're like $10,000.
Oh yeah, I'm thinking just completely rich relative.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
you know, it's the Sultan table's a whole lot of table, you know, having seen it at multiple cons.
Yeah.
And it would be neat as a novelty. I don't know if I could use it in my house. We still might down the line get the cheapest one, the Emissary, one that looks like a normal table.
I like that one a lot.
It's not too bad, and for, you know, it's about in line for a custom table.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not gonna drop $10,000 on the table.
But Uncle Cletus might, right?
Yeah, great Uncle Cletus might. Uncle Cletus,
I don't know.
He might drop the money on the Sultan, or maybe a very appreciative listener.
Oh yeah, there you go. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, next category. The best nostalgia game. And those games that give you that nostalgic feeling. Could be a reprint. Maybe not. Maybe something that's just an older game you find at a thrift store or something.
The Cody Jones Award.
Cody is Mr. Nostalgia.
That's right.
And a trip to the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Indiana will tell you that Cody and Kalen like the nostalgia. So what was your pick for a nostalgia game?
I picked a new game.
Okay.
Space Empires 4X.
As a nostalgia game.
Because you break that out and just everything about that game screams the 70s. Because you have, it's just hex and counter. It comes with a hojillion amount of counters. Uh-huh. You have to track everything on paper. It's, for a new game, it is very old school in both look and in function.
Wow.
And I know it's not a reprint or anything, but that game sparks more nostalgic fires in me than some of the reprints coming
There's
out.
The ships, the Datsun and the Pinto.
What?
There's like 70s cars.
Oh, okay. I was too busy not being born.
Oh, no.
So Space Empires 4X. It's a new game, but it has that old-timey feel.
Okay. Wow. There you go. All right. My pick for best nostalgia game, also a new reprint, and that is the new version of Can't Stop.
That is a good one.
When you play that game, you feel like you're in the 80s. You know, you feel like you're just, I don't know. I get that feeling.
Well, that board especially.
It's just a plastic chunky board that's very, very 80s looking. And, you know, I don't know. It's one of those games that it's like Fireball Island or one of those other games where you feel like on the box there should be some kid pointing and laughing, you know.
Yeah.
But that's just a really fun game, and you just feel nostalgic when you play it. And I'm saying this as someone who never played the original version of the game. So it's not like I'm playing this and getting some feeling of nostalgia, but I can just... Kaylin, you said that her family played it as a kid. So, and the look on her face when I brought it out the first time was kind of that, oh, wow, we used to play this, you know, so that was kind of cool.
That's a good game. So, good pick.
All right.
We three kings of Orient, bearing gifts, we travel.
Next one. Game to give a burned out Dominion player. We could also call this the deck building 2.0 game, or, you know, if you so want to go in that direction. But best game to give someone who's a little bit burned out playing so much Dominion, maybe the deck building thing's worn off. Cody.
I think I know what you're going to say, but I'm going a different direction.
Okay.
I'm actually going with something that was released fairly early in the deck building cycle, and that's Nightfall.
Okay.
I've had a chance to play that a few more times. I was kind of lukewarm my first time. I think it, you know, it's like most AEG products. If you buy it right away, it's not fixed. You know, you kind of have to wait for things to come out, you know, for fixes and errata and whatnot. But once I've played it more or less in its finished state, it's a good game. It mixes enough deck building with other aspects. It succeeds where Thunderstone just utterly failed. It's a nice change of pace. The linking is interesting. So I think you get a different enough vibe from it that you might not get totally burnt out on like our example person did. You know, if they're burnt out on Dominion, but they like deck building, Nightfall is a good next step, I think.
I like it. Now, you're probably thinking that I'm going to say Eminent Domain.
I do.
But I'm not.
Okay, good job.
No, because I was thinking that someone who really likes deck building games is probably going to want something that's not samey, you know? And I like your pick of Nightfall because it is a really cool game, and it feels different. But at its core, it's kind of samey. I mean, it's still the same.
I thought it was a deck building game.
Well, it is. But that's why my pick is A Few Acres of Snow.
No.
Which has a deck building aspect to it. But I'm saying it takes that person who's burned out on Dominion and pushes them a little bit broadens their horizons a little bit, pushes them into another direction. Still has a little bit of a deck building element to it, but it kicks them into a little farther into the pool of gaming. I'm getting a weird look. I'm
don't like
a raised
that pick.
Eyebrow.
Don't
from
like that pick.
There. You don't like it?
No.
Okay.
Not enough deck building for me.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But sorry. I'm just someone that's just me that if I like one kind of game, I don't just want another replica of the same kind of game. I'd want to change.
Nightfall's different enough.
I don't disagree with you. This goes a little farther for me.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Okay.
So Nightfall then.
You ready for the next one?
I'm ready.
All right. Gateway game. This is a kind of just a common category, but mm-hmm. It'd be real easy to pick the typical usual suspects of Ticket to Ride and such. But I figure we're not probably going to do that.
I know what you're picking for this.
Okay, you probably do. You want me to go first?
Do it.
Kingdom Builder.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. Now, because I've had several conversations with folks at our game night about Kingdom Builder being not a good gateway game. Like, because that's been on the internet and on Board Game Geek, a lot of people are saying that. But then everybody I've played with says, no, I don't, I think it's a little bit too complex. It's too, a little bit too hard to get your head around all the stuff that you can and can't do. Like, I really have had a lot of trouble with folks not understanding the iconography of, this token lets you put something on the board. This token lets you move something, that is, and so they've said that getting your head around the strategy of it in the first game is not enough to draw people in. But
I disagree. I think it's no more complex than like Ticket to Ride. I really.
I think the strategy is more complex than
Ticket to Ride. Yeah, I'm talking just like learning the game. I don't think it's that hard.
Yeah. I don't either.
I think it's a fine gateway game.
Yeah, but I think the reason why it's a good gateway game is basically what you and my friend Brian and what some other folks have demonstrated to me is that you play that first time and you go, I'm just not so sure. But I've had people come back and say, can we try that one again? I'd like to give that one another try, So rather than a gateway game being just a game that you play it once and you're like, I'm hooked, give me a copy, let's do it. Yes, that's Ticket to Ride is definitely that game, But a game that, you play it that one time and you're not sure how you feel about it, but it makes you want to come back and try it again. I think that still falls into a gateway category for me because, it gets people thinking about things. I think a deeper game can be a gateway game in that respect. So that's Kingdom Builders. Jury's still a little bit out on that guy because, I got to give it a little bit more time. But I think that it's one that I'll try to bring out in with my non-gaming friends and see what happens.
And I encourage you to do that because that game is really dull.
Oh, no, it's not.
It puts me to sleep. It's just,
but it's short. That's the other thing. It takes a half an hour to play.
But you're not really selling the game to be like, oh, I think it's dull. Hey, but it's short. It'll be over quick. I'm like, well, it's still a half an hour. That's just really pretty dull.
Yeah, but I think that... No, I think it just speaks to your personality. Nothing wrong with your personality, but I know that you just threw stuff. Oh, he's walking out of the room. No, because it's you don't like games that
aren't
just
dull.
You don't like games where there's not interaction. I know you don't like games where you're sitting in silence making decisions.
Yeah,
but a lot of people do like games like that.
I like Through the Ages.
Well, that's true. But even Ticket to Ride, you don't have to play that with a whole lot of. You can play that pretty silently,
Kingdom Builder's just dull. But,
okay,
but
I'm not going to defend it that heavily because it's still...
It is a good gateway game, though. Right. I think it would be good for family. So.
Okay.
I'm not on you.
All right.
Because I went way back for mine.
Oh, okay.
I went way back.
Ticket to Ride.
Cleopatra and the Society of Architects.
It's a good game.
I maybe a cop-out. It's been around a while. It's not really new. But it kind of gets forgotten, I think, in people say gateway game, they're like Catan, Ticket to Ride, boom. Cleopatra is not a bad start. There's interesting mechanics in it that are in other games, but they're presented in kind of an easy to learn format. There's lots of bits to it. You're building the temple. Ooh, that's neat.
Yeah.
I think it's a good family game and a good gateway game.
I think that's a really good pick. I do forget about that one myself too. But.
And it can be acquired pretty cheaply nowadays I think they overproduced it,
which is weird, but you can get a copy for that for $25-$30 maybe online. So that's a good pick. I can't disagree with that one. It's kind of a classic in my book.
Santa baby slipped a Rolex under the tree for me. I've been an awful good guy, Santa buddy, and hurry down.
All right, next one. I kind of made this category up. So.
Okay.
And so hopefully you'll... Did you think it was an okay category?
It's fine.
All right.
Great name.
A game that might force a Jones Theory decision. And what I meant by that is a game that you might get somebody that would put it into the same bucket as something that they already have, you mm-hmm. know? And, you know, so those, something like Risk Legacy or something that's just way out there is probably not going to fit in anybody's bucket. But there's right. lots of games that have similar genres, similar mechanics, you know, that are good games that might force someone to have to cull something out of their its collection if they're a Jones Theory
adherent.
Yes, acolyte.
Acolyte.
Yeah. So, what was your pick for this guy?
My pick is Dungeon Run, and yeah, I figured you might have picked that as well. I'm getting the signal from our producers.
That's yes. my pick too. Yeah.
Yes, because you know, dungeon crawling's hot right now, and Dungeon Run is the bridge between games like Dungeon Quest, which is, you know, kind of your old school. You know, you're going to the dungeon, see how much you can come out with, and it's pretty light and luck based. And things like Cutthroat Caverns, where it's dungeon delving, but it's screw your neighbor. But Dungeon Run also bridges into, you could even say, games like, you know, the D&D adventure system games like Castle Ravenloft and Dritz and Shardalon,
yeah.
and the forthcoming Descent reprint. You know, dungeon crawling is hot right now. So you've got Dungeon Run, this new release from Plaid Hat that I think fits in a lot of different buckets. So you could have some conversations, I think.
That is absolutely my pick, too, for exactly the same reasons. And hey, we totally didn't plan this, by the way. I should have put this up front that we did not look at each other's list. So we don't really know what we're going to say. It's kind of like when we do our top 11. But this one happened to be at the same point, and it just so happens we're going to do a review of Dungeon Run this episode.
We are.
Yeah.
You're listening to Game On with Cody and John, where Jones Theory compliance is a way of life.
All right, so it's review time, and I'm excited.
Are you?
Because for the first time in a long time, I'm not going to be given the main rundown on the rules.
I know.
It's going to be this guy over here.
It's going to be a little
shorter. Wearing the very exciting classic Cincinnati red shirt.
Yep.
What's it called?
That's Mr. Redleg.
Mr. Redleg shirt. Sir. Yeah, that's for all the video podcast listeners right now.
That's right.
Yeah, we don't have a video podcast.
No.
Dungeon Run, newest one from Plaid Hat Games. Tell us all about it, Cody.
I'd love to. Dungeon Run is designed by Mr. Bistro, whoever the hell that is. And
Mr. Bistro?
That's what it says on the box. So.
Okay.
Mr. Craig Bistro. And
Horatio A. Bistro.
That's right. It's produced by Plaid Hat Games, as John said. And Plaid Hat Games, they are behind the very successful Summoner Wars franchise, which simulates kind of like it's a miniatures game but played with cards. It's a very tight game, very great game. And this Dungeon Run is set in that universe. It is a so instead of just a generic fantasy thing, if you've played Summoner Wars, you'll recognize a lot of the art style and the factions and the people. So that's kind of a neat little touch.
Yeah.
So the premise of the game, it's a game for 1 to 6 players where the idea is it's not really a cooperative game, but everyone is playing a hero, and they're archetypical heroes. You have warriors and rogues and wizards and priests and things like that. So you're all going into this dungeon looking for a summoning stone, the summoner stone, which is guarded by a boss. The boss is in the base game. There are 4 different bosses, and it's randomly determined for every game. So the idea is, a la Cutthroat Caverns in a lot of ways, is that you're going to be going through this modular dungeon. It comes with probably about 20 to 30, I'd say, these square kind of thick cardboard tiles that you'll lay out, and that's the dungeon, right, basically, and you'll explore as you go. So kind of like Castle Ravenloft in that regard.
Felt similar to that with the tiles. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and most tiles are normal, and they will just have a treasure rating and an encounter rating. So you'll roll a d6 and you will see if you have a treasure, an encounter, or both. Some of them have special abilities where you know, it may be you don't have an encounter, but if you're on this space or a space adjacent to this space, you can't use your character's special abilities.
Yeah,
things like that. But the overall idea is that you'll be exploring this dungeon. You'll want to have maybe some teamwork because some of these challenges can be difficult to overcome. Until you flip over the last tile, and that's when you'll reveal the boss. The boss is a souped up monster, harder than most things you'll encounter in there. And if you beat him, he will drop the summoning stone. That's when this game becomes a little more competitive, because the goal of the game is to be the first one to grab the summoning stone. I keep calling it either summoning or summoner. I'm not really sure what it is.
Yeah, it summons.
Yeah, the MacGuffin. And the first one to bring that stone to the dungeon entrance tile, so basically they run out of the dungeon with it, they win. Or if they're the last person standing.
Right.
Because often what will happen is someone will grab the stone and then all the players will just start going after them and fighting them. What's nice is when you get the summoning stone, your character gets kind of goes into beast mode and has you know this extra power that grants it. So
it's different for every character, right?
Yeah, different for every character. So you know, in a nutshell, it's a basic game. It's a lot like Summoner War in that it's very easy to learn. There's a little nuance in the game, but it's pretty much you have a list of actions you can do in a turn, and you can only do two of those. And you pick which two you want. You know, do you want to move? Do you want to fight? Do you want to explore? You know, so on and so forth. And then after that, it just becomes sort of a screw your neighbor sort of thing. There's elements of that in the first part of the game too. You know, if you kill someone, if you kill a monster and they drop a treasure, you know, you have to spend a second action to pick up that treasure. Say you've used all your actions, someone else can then move in and just take the treasure for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, so it's as much teamwork as you want to use early on. And then it gets kind of nasty after that.
You can also choose to either help when you're doing battles and things like that for encounters. You can choose to help the person by allowing them to add dice to their dice pool that they're rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, then you might get the benefit of being able to heal or something like that. But if you can also choose to sabotage
right.
them, and which will kind of screw them up. And there's kind of no real penalty for that, I don't think, nor does it cost anything.
Yeah, you can end up taking wounds if they're right. still successful.
Yeah.
But the game definitely encourages some sort of teamwork in that first half of the game.
Right.
You know, I guess that I would say that first two-thirds of the game before the summoning stone is dropped. And then after that, it becomes a free-for-all, get out of there alive with the stone sort of a thing. It's neat because you have a bunch of different heroes, and each of the heroes have ability cards. And you know, as you progress through the dungeon, your character will get to level up, and you know they can add to their. You know, you have really basic stats in this game. You know, the four stats are brawn, magic, skill, and life. And life's not really a stat; that's how many wounds you get.
Right.
You know, brawn is used for you know physical fighting. Magic's used for magic. Skill is kind of your catch-all. Rogue abilities, you know, sneaking yeah. by things, disarming traps, all sorts of things.
I think the main thing you use that for is to escape. When you want to escape a monster, that seems like that stat is what you have to roll against
right.
to get out.
You know, so a lot of it is just standard dungeon fare. You know, there'll be monsters are the bulk of the encounters. You will have things like traps, and you'll have special rooms. One room is nice. You know, you can throw magic items into it, and maybe you'll get this really uber artifact for it. You know. Things like that. So it, in a way, it kind of combines, I think at its core, it combines Cutthroat Caverns and I would say like Castle Ravenloft or one of the D&D Adventure System games.
Yeah. The way the monsters move, because like a wandering monster thing mm-hmm. at the end of the turn where they're going to move to different rooms, that felt to me like Ravenloft when you are controlling the different monsters and they're doing different things.
Yeah. It's kind of like that first two thirds really has that Ravenloft feel. And then, but it has that foreboding a la Cutthroat Caverns that you know you're going to betray each other eventually.
Yeah.
You know, that's the game. And then you just when you want to kind of strike and, you know, how you want to do that. So games we've played go about 60 to 90 minutes. I don't see that really going beyond 90 minutes. It says 1 to 6 people. I think we would both agree 4 is probably the maximum.
Yeah, any more than that, and I don't think it plays quote nearly as well. So.
Yeah. But it there's a lot of good stuff going on here. It's kind of a good second release, I think, from Plaid Hat Games. You know, they've really been just heavy on the Summoner Wars, which has been good, especially that Master Set is a really fine product. But this was originally a print and play game that kind of got acquired by Plaid Hat and done up real pretty and has been released to us. So what were your thoughts on it? If you want to run down our system.
Yeah. Oh, well, so the way that we do our review system here is that we call it buy, try, or deny. We have buy points, which are the things we really liked about a game. Try points, things that were kind of so-so. And deny points, which would be things that we don't like that might give you pause. We figure if we give you all of those points, that it'll give you kind of a good idea of what the game's all about and whether you might be interested in it. So buy points for Dungeon Run?
I think it's very well produced. You know, you have the, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's like lavish, you know, it's not like a Fantasy Flight game or anything. You know, it has good miniatures, although some of mine were kind of gummy.
like kind of soft?
Yeah, like they were just really bendable. Like some of them you couldn't paint because the paint would chip if you tried to. They were so flexible.
Oh.
I don't know if that's just an issue with my copy. I know that not all companies produce their miniatures with an aim to paint, so I can't really fault them for that. But it's just everything, you know, from the cards to the tiles to the rule book is presented in a very clean, readable, functional way. You know, it's not this really... It's not, you won't go wow, but you'll say this is very well put together. Yeah. You know, that sounds like a try point, but it really is a buy point for me. It's produced in a professional and clean, well done manner. So presentation's a buy for me.
I definitely would give that a buy as well. And the reason for me more than anything is the fact that Plaid Hat Games is not a big game company, and they've only really produced one other game, the Summoner Wars PAX, and now recently the Master Set. But you look at this game, Dungeon Run, sitting on the shelf next to all the other big, you know, Fantasy Flight and Days of Wonder and those kind of folks, and it holds up. I mean, you the components that are in there, the quality of the art on the dungeon tiles, the card quality, all the stuff, you know, is really nice. I wasn't a real big fan of the dice. I thought the dice were kind of small and of a cheaper quality.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're gamers. We got plenty of dice.
Yeah.
It also, I guess, did you have any more buy points? Are we ready to move to try points?
Yeah, we're ready to move to try.
Okay. Because I feel like they probably could have stood to have two different colors of dice. Because in the game, when you roll to battle something, the bad guy rolls and the good guy rolls, and then you're matching up dice to see if you block or give hits. It's a pretty clean system. I like it a lot. But I think it's easier when you have two different colors of dice, so you can sort of match them up a little bit better.
Yeah, and the dice are going to be a try point for me. It's like... I mean, and not even the physical aspects of them. Yeah, they're a little small and they really need two colors. The dice system is good. I think it gets a little tiresome after a while. Like, I love chucking dice as much as the next guy. I'm an Ameritrasher to the core, but it just kind of feels... It's almost like Fortune Glory in a lot of ways. After a point, it's just kind of like you're just rolling dice. Yeah. And it... I don't know. It gets a little old, but the rest of the game is tight enough to where I think that... That makes it not as bad. That's why it's a try, not a deny. Because I feel the game is beautiful in its simplicity. There's not a lot going on, but what's there has been, it's tight and it's balanced, and I think it's done well. But the dice can get a little, I think in a longer game, just get a little tiresome.
Yeah, I think it's a game that really should be played fast. Like, yes. I think that if you have your analysis paralysis gamer who's used to playing a lot of deep 3-hour strategy games, you know, you don't want to play with that guy because, you know, you want to be able to turn the tile over, move in, roll for the encounter. Oh, it's a giant rat. Okay, the rat's going to attack you now. You know, I mean, you just got to kind of play it real fast as if you're, you know, running through the dungeon like that. So
you nailed it on the head. That's exactly right. I think this game, if everyone's playing in that spirit, and that was a great point you made, because I think that game really shines. I think if you play it too analytical, it just gets bogged down and it won't be much fun. Because I don't think that's not the spirit of the game.
No, it's, you don't sit there and go, well, I could go into this room, but then the ghoul is going to attack me. But I could go over here. No, just go in there and let the ghoul attack you. That's what's supposed to happen. You've got a big sword. Go kill him.
Exactly.
You know? So that, I think that's in that spirit that makes the game super fun.
Yeah. Deny points?
I don't think I have any deny points, except that I don't like games that end in a stalemate.
Yeah.
And really the one long game that you and I played of this with a couple other folks, it ended up being you and I at the very entrance. And it was kind of a cool cat and mouse game as to what are you going to do? Are you going to, step back? Are you going to come in? And, but then we got to that last point and, basically one of us had the opportunity to roll or do something in a way that would kill us both. And just end the game. And that's how it sort of ended. And so that, to me, that's just kind of anticlimactic of, and I think the rules say that if that happens, you play again, and that's fine. But I kind of like something with a more definitive ending to it.
Yeah, that's my only deny point, is that I feel the end can feel a touch anticlimactic. And I kind of worry, this isn't really a point per se about the game, I worry that it might get lost in the shuffle between... the D&D Adventure System games and Descent coming out and Dungeon Quest. I think it's unique enough, and I think it's a solid enough game. You know, I would rate it in the try plus to buy area. You know, I think it's well done. It's
well put together. Very, very well done. Yeah.
But I just hope it doesn't, since it's from a smaller publisher, I hope it doesn't get lost in the shuffle. And I'm hoping that by reviewing it, we can at least shed some more light on it. And
yeah, we definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I like it. So,
but going back to our great review, by the way.
Oh, it was all right.
Yeah. But going back to our category for the gift guide, game that, you know, might force a Jones Theory decision. So for you,
yes.
Where does this fall, Jones Theory, for you? Is it its own bucket, or is it, you know, is it edged out by something else? You know, I know we've said it's a really good game and we'd recommend it, but, you know, for Jones Theory purposes, what would you say?
It's really tough because the game I immediately want to associate with is Dungeon Quest.
Uh-huh.
And it's different enough from Dungeon Quest because Dungeon Quest, you don't really... It's almost like more of a solitaire game in a lot of ways, because you're just going into the dungeon and trying to amass as much stuff. That's almost like Ink and Gold mixed with a Dungeon Dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
You're going in, seeing how much you can get and pulling out, hoping you don't die horribly.
Yeah.
This is more half Dungeon Quest, half Castle Ravenloft with a splash of Cutthroat Caverns. So right now, I don't like having too many buckets, but I really don't have anything that's a lot like it, to be honest. All right. Mean, I would say if I had the... Yeah, and then again, I don't know if it's close enough to the D&D Adventure series. That's what I think, gameplay-wise, it's closest to.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I feel about it, too. And so it probably gets edged out for me by the D&D Adventure series games, which right now I have Castle Ravenloft, and that one's fine. But because when I think about who I would play this game with, well, of course, I'd play with you and with, you know, kind of our gaming buddies. But Ravenloft also fills a niche for me being able to play with my kids, mm-hmm. which I could play this one with my kids, but they wouldn't get the combative aspect to it.
You could play the first 2/3 of it.
Yeah, yeah. But then after that, then I think they wouldn't be able to process.
No, I'm just saying you stop after that.
No, yeah, after you beat the boss, mm-hmm. yeah. It drops a summoning stone, we all win. You know, yeah. I guess that could be okay. But so for that one, it might get edged out a little bit by Ravenloft, but still a great game.
Yeah, I think it's strong enough to stand on its own so far. We'll see what else comes out. But definitely give Dungeon Run a try. And like we said, it definitely causes a Jones Theory discussion.
Yeah.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel.
All right, next category in the gift guide is sort of based upon the new hotness of game production that we just talked about a couple episodes ago, and that's Kickstarter.
Uh-oh.
So we created the category, the best game to back on Kickstarter as a gift to someone else.
Hmm.
And this one was tricky for me because I realized that the game that I thought of for this is one that the backing period has already closed.
Yeah.
And that is D-Day Dice, which is, I think, probably, if not the most successful, one of the most successful projects on Kickstarter in general.
Right.
I think it raised over $170,000 for when they were finally done with it.
I thought about getting in on it.
Well, and it was like, I think for one copy, like the base level to get a copy of the game was 35. And so I went ahead and backed it. And I'm kind of glad that I did, because every time they would reach a goal, like a stretch goal for their funding, because I think the funding goal was like 13,000, something like that.
Wow.
And there was 170,000. So they just kept throwing more free stuff out there. Oh, so now we're going to have these speckled dice for one set. Oh, now we're going to give you three sets of those. Oh, and here is a tin that we're going to put it in. And they're going to give us like this canvas dice bag and all this stuff that goes along with it now. And so I picked that one. I, you know, again, it's too late to get in on that net right now for the holidays. But, you know, that'd be a great extra stuff that you can, you know, give to your gaming friend there, you know, extra incentive for Kickstarter. So
yeah.
What was your pick for that guy?
I picked one. It's right now. I mean, it's all when you listen to the episode, I guess.
We're taping this on December the 12th,
mm-hmm.
2011.
I want to say our buddy Tom Tullis over at Fat Dragon Games, he has a really innovative idea for a miniatures game. Fat Dragon Games, if you don't know, they're all about the modular dungeon terrain. That's kind of the paper craft stuff. You print it out, you fold it, you glue it. I have no skill at that, but I've done it before, and you can make some pretty cool things.
Looks awesome.
So Lost Reich is kind of this, it's almost like an alternate pulp, maybe with a dash of steampunk in it, setting. But it's a miniatures game, But it is a print-on-demand miniatures game.
And you build the miniatures out of like cardstock?
Yeah, and then you can have as many miniatures as you want. If you want to play a small squad-based game, you only print out what you need. But if you want to do a big game, you pretty much have to buy the rules once, and then you can print out as many minis as you need for it.
Wow!
So it's the model quality is really neat, and I'm just really intrigued by it. So if you check out Lost Reich, that's R-R-E-I-C-H, on Kickstarter, I think it has some legs. So I know there are pro and anti Kickstarter listeners on both sides, but for this category, that's one I think you can check out at a low investment level and maybe get something really cool out of it. So
very
check
cool.
it out.
And we love supporting the Fat Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now here's the time in the gift guide where we're going to create some factions, you know,
okay.
The Euro Gamers and the Ameritrashers, right?
You know, yes.
We're all about bringing people together, but we're going to split them up for a second here and do the best Euro game that you can give to an Ameritrash gamer and the best Ameritrash game to give to a Euro gamer. And we'll start with the best Euro game to give to an Ameritrash gamer.
Okay. I'm going to say this in High Hoosier, but I'm going to say Troyes.
Troyes.
Because I think that game has a lot of Euro mechanics, but I think you can hook the Ameritrashers by the dice. And there's a lot of manipulation for the dice, but at its heart, I think I would classify that as a Euro game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I think you can hook people like me with, hey, there's dice, you know, there's some randomness, right? You know, you're not trading in the med, right?
So, right.
So okay. Toi.
A good pick, Toi.
Thank you.
My pick is actually I hate to do this because I, you know, because I feel like I can't speak that intelligently about it to pick a game that I've never played, but but I've really been wanting to play this one, I just haven't had a chance to yet, and that is Stronghold.
Yes.
And this is a game that's about sort of like a castle siege where you have waves of goblins, orcs, and trolls that are trying to attack this castle. You have one player who's defending the castle and building up like catapults and hot boiling oil and that kind of stuff. So that sounds very Ameritrash, but the way that the things are built is very Euro. Everything's cubes, wooden cubes on the board. There's mechanics for time that certain things will take certain amounts of time, game time, to be able to produce. And so it does have a lot of a Euro resource management sort of a feel to it, but also has that Ameritrash kind of theme to it. So Stronghold.
Good pick. I've heard such good things about it, and I've heard the guys at the D6G gush about it.
I should pick that up on GameShare, and maybe you and I
you
can get that.
You should.
Maybe next month.
I should take no responsibility in it.
Okay. Very well done. All right. And so then that brings us to the other side of this, which is the best Ameritrash game to give to primarily a Euro gamer. Mm-hmm. And what'd you get for that one?
I'm going with Cyclades, or in the High Hoosier, Cyclades.
Cyclades. The High Hoosier.
Because this game, it's got dudes on a map, but every other element of the game to me strikes me as very Euro. There's a lot of bidding. Just the way the core mechanics of the game come across very Euro-ish if you take away the small dudes on a map element.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good hybrid, and it's a way I think you could kind of trick a Euro gamer. You know, they would look at it and they'd be like, oh no, there's a lot of fighting involved. It's like, oh no, but there's bidding and there's resource management, and you'll love it. So I think it does both well, and it's a fun little game. So Cyclades.
I love it how it's all about tricking. You trick, yeah,
exactly.
You trick the Ameritrasher.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they won't willingly try it.
Right, right. So my game is along the same lines. So it was an Ameritrash game to give a Euro gamer. And I hope that you'll think that this qualifies as an Ameritrash game. I was kind of on the fence about it. Mm-hmm. And that is Lords of Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Good pick.
Okay.
Good pick.
So, and this is one that I think you can fool your Euro game friends into saying, well, it's really about building your casino. It's a building game. And, you know, it's resource management, and it's an economic game, you know. But essentially, you know, it's got the dice element to it. It's got the great
theme.
Game, the theme, the gambling elements, all that kind of stuff. What a great game. Anybody should play it. And yeah, I think you could definitely get your Euro gaming friends interested. And I, you know, can guarantee that they'll participate in at least one stand-up die roll.
Good pick. Good pick.
All right, so that is that guy. The next one, we're kind of coming closer to the end here.
Mm-hmm.
The best game to bring to the family Christmas gathering.
That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, that could be any number of things. And we've got the party games and such. But
yeah, I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to go in a more expensive direction.
Okay.
I'm going to say Crokinole.
Oh, okay.
Because I think, and yeah, they have the May Day boards you can get. I would still recommend you probably get something a little better, pay a little more money. But
yeah,
I think that can become a family classic. You know, I could see, you know, oh, you got Junior and Dad playing at the Crokinole table. And it's something, you know, the grandparents can play. It's something that the young kids can play. You know, even that stretches bounds even beyond, you know, my first inclination is just like, oh, time's up. You know, yeah. Perfect game. But, you know, this I think everyone can play on some level. And it just has that, it has that Christmas feel, I think. You know, this nice wood board and you're playing and the fire is roaring and it's all, you know,
aww,
wonderful feeling. So, Crokinole.
Don't flick those discs into the fire.
No.
They will burn. No. I guess I picked, it is a sort of in the party game category, but one that I've had good success with non-gamers, and that would be a lot of people that I would be gathering with at Christmas, is Dixit.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I know it's kind of a middle of the road pick, I guess, but it's a really a good one as far as you know, being able to get people to think creatively and participate and do things that maybe they wouldn't ordinarily do. Time's Up Title Recall is definitely a game that does that as well. But I think when you get grandma involved, or you know, exactly, the older crowd, maybe not necessarily older, but maybe a more reserved crowd, they might not be interested in doing the charades kind of things. I've had Time's Up Title Recall. I've never had a bad game of that, but I've had a game that's bordered on being kind of in the middle because I've just had family members that just weren't interested in, you know, flailing all around and making gestures and stuff. But Dixit's one where you can look at the pretty artwork on the cards and, you know, say your phrase or whatever, and it could be pretty good.
Wooden rabbits,
you know.
For whatever
I want reason. Someone to explain to me where those come from in that
German
game.
Drugs, my friend.
Must be that.
German drugs.
All right, so we've got final category, and then we're going to get to our picks for what's on top of our Christmas list.
Yes.
Okay. The last category is because we're hobby gamers, and you know, we tend to check out our friendly professional game stores. But you got to admit, a lot of the shopping for Christmas is done at those big box retailers, mm-hmm. Walmart, Target, here in the Midwest, Meijer, you know, a lot of those other kind of places. So this category is, what is the best game that you might find at a big box retailer? That's a good quality game that you'd want to give to a family member, or even better, to a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the best thing that you could find at Walmart or Target? I picked those two because those are kind of probably the biggest national chains.
Yeah, I feel like mine's a cop-out just because I've mentioned it so many times in the past, but Monopoly deal for the price point and just the accessibility, because everyone knows Monopoly, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a Monopoly hater. I think it's an okay game if you play it by the book.
Yeah.
Not one of my favorites, but I would play it every now and then. Monopoly deal distills the core essence of Monopoly into about a 10 to 15 minute kind of take that set collection game. You can teach it to anyone, you can pick it up anywhere, and everyone gets the gist of Monopoly. So I would say Monopoly Deal is my pick.
It's a good pick, good pick. Yep. My pick is actually one that I probably could have used for the previous category of the game to bring to the Christmas gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that, I mean, it's a common one that shows up in their big retailers, but never gets a whole lot of love, and that's the game Imagine If.
Mm.
I don't know if you ever played that one before, but the concept of it is very simple, is that you're basically trying to get around a track of some sort. And the way you get points is you have a card and you ask the question, you know, you have a person. Well, I guess it's on the board. Oh, yeah. On the board, you write the people's names on like dry erase marker. Then you roll a die and you move around and it'll be like, oh, Cody. Okay. So then you pick a card and it'll say, imagine if Cody were a kind of ice cream. What kind of ice cream would he be? And they would, and then you have six choices.
Vanilla.
Yeah. So you have six choices on the card, and then everybody around the table has voting cards and will choose. And then, you know, you'll get points based upon matching other people and whoever has the majority and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really good game to play with family. And I think it's a really good game. I found when I was newly married, it was a good game for me to play with my new brothers and sisters-in-law that I didn't really know very well, because I got to hear some of the funny stories of that family, of my wife's family, during the game, you know. And it's great also if you do have a close-knit family and you've got a lot of stories and a lot of history, you know. It'll bring up those stories of, well, I said that that the kind of shoes that Bob was a pair of moccasins, because you remember that time down at the river, you know. And you can just bring up a lot of laughter and a lot of stories. So it's it's one that I've always had real good success with. And I think they've come out with several new versions of it over the course of the years. And I just saw it the other day in Target for a pretty good price there. So nice party game, not one that kind of flies under the radar, but it's a lot of fun. Imagine If.
Good pick.
All right, are you ready to get down to what you're asking Santa for this year?
Let's do it.
All right, so we're down to it. We're at the department store in Christmas Story, the big tower of snow with the, you know. And exactly. We got the Red Ryder BB gun in our minds and ready to tell Santa.
With a compass in the stock.
That's exactly, yeah.
That's right. And the thing that tells time.
The thing that tells time. So, Cody, what is on the top of your Christmas list this year? What would you love to get?
I feel like I've cheated a bit because I already have it.
Oh.
But... Risk Legacy.
Okay.
I think it's so cool, and listeners just hunker down, because in the next year I think we're going to be talking a lot about it. You know, it may be a dud. We may play one game and be like, oh, this game's trash. I don't think that's the case.
No.
I just think with all of the bits inside, you know, if you think Christmas morning, you're opening presents, right? Open up Risk Legacy, you open the box, you check it out. There are things that you shouldn't open yet. You know, it's like, do not open unless you've played X games. Do not open until it. And it's just that excitement, I think, you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving. So
that's true.
Risk Legacy, top of my list. And, you know, I may get a second copy, like I mentioned, if we play this first one out.
All right. So it's not even on your wish list. It's on your already got list.
That's right.
That's cool. All right. So mine is a game that I should not like and that I should not have a desire to get, especially after we talked about... Dungeon Run and that whole Jones Theory thing. But the game that's on my list that I really think I want to get is Super Dungeon Explorer.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
And I just listened to a review of that game, and the gameplay sounds pretty interesting. I think I like the fact that it comes with 35 or 40 miniatures that all need to be assembled.
Yeah.
So that's part of the fun for me. It was the part of the fun of when I bought Space Hulk, was that time that you spend assembling the miniatures. And from what I hear, the miniature quality is really good, and it kind of begs to be painted too, which might be a nice little project to do.
Look at you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pricey one. I think it's like $90 or something like that. For that guy. So, but the fact that it's all those miniatures is, yeah, I think what makes it worthwhile.
No idea.
There.
It was that expensive.
Yeah. But from what I'm reading and what I'm hearing, the rules seem real fun. It sounds Dungeon Run like, except it's fully, well, it's Descent like. It's many versus one overlord kind of character. And it almost feels kind of like Gauntlet, like you have like spawn points for monsters and things just keep pouring out of the spawn points. So, you know, I shouldn't want it. I shouldn't want to like it at all, because it's, you know, I'm also anticipating the release of Descent 2.0, which I will buy.
Yep.
That's going to happen no matter what. Yep. So, who knows? I'm either going to start creating a whole bunch of different dungeon crawl buckets to make myself Jones Theory compliant, or maybe I'll paint my copy and sell it. I know some folks who have done that kind of stuff before. Yeah. Right, Cody?
Yep.
So that's on my list, Super Dungeon Explore.
Those good lists.
Yeah.
Good list this year.
Yeah, hopefully that'll help you out a little bit with you know, your shopping, listeners. Don't you think?
Yes.
Are you ready to wrap the show up? You're looking kind of tired. Did you eat some turkey or something?
No, I'm good.
Some Christmas cookies?
Good. I am filled with the warmth of Christmas time.
And cookies.
And cookies.
All right, let's wrap it up.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your.
Well, that wraps up like a gift, the latest episode of Game On.
This gets worse and worse every single time. You
know, it's the gift that keeps on
giving.
You're
the pun master.
Thank you. But we thank you. you threw me off, Jerry. We thank you for listening. We hope that we helped you get the best gift for the gamer or non-gamer in your life.
Or if we didn't, we hope we entertained you for
that's right. It was a good hour.
But, you know, we'd like to ask you to join us in 2 weeks. We're staying on, you know, even though it's Christmas season, we're staying on the schedule here. Because, hey, we got another holiday coming up, and that's New Year's. Mm-hmm. And so in two weeks, we're going to be bringing you our gaming resolutions for 2012 coming up. And we'll probably revisit some of the ones we made last year and see how we did.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I don't even remember what we said.
So we'll see how it goes. Yep.
We'll see how it goes. But we do wish all of you, whatever you may be celebrating this time of year, the happy holiday season, Christmas, New Year's, Hanukkah, all that good stuff. We really love making this podcast for you. And until next time,
game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at GameOnPodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!